Hey, I'm Adam Small.
And I'm Jake Moses.
This is our podcast, The Performer's Pathway.
A podcast adventure to help guide and navigate your musical life and career.
As a prelude to every episode, we'd like to remind our listeners that this podcast is about the other side of the musical coin. One side, which you see at our website, mymusicmasterclass.com, is what to do in the practice room. But the other side is how to maximize your talent and skills in the real world, and that's what this podcast is about. Also, if you have a few extra seconds to spare,
which is technically only three beats at 60 BPM,
please subscribe to our show on your podcast app of choice and rate us 5 stars.
And don't forget to leave a comment.
Your support will help us expand our audience and create new episodes.
And lastly, word of mouth is always super helpful. So if you like what you hear, please tell the world.
Before we get started here, I want to mention our guidebook / workbook called The Motivated Musician. It's geared towards serious musicians and it offers challenges, exercises, professional advice, and more to help keep your musical life and career on track. Also, as an extra perk, members get exclusive discounts from My Music Masterclass. And if you want to learn more, just go to mymusicmasterclass.com, hit subscribe in the header menu, and you'll be good to go. Hey, everyone. This is our first time doing video with our podcast. And we're actually testing out remotely.fm, which is a service that will record video up to 4K and audio, and it does it locally so that there's shouldn't be any Zoom glitchiness or anything like that. We used to use another service, but we're trying this one out because we want to see if this whole YouTube thing makes sense. And maybe you like seeing us or maybe you don't. I don't know. It's hard to say if you're going to like seeing us, but we're here, and we're here today with Peter Mazza, who is a great guitarist, man, and a New Yorker, like a real New Yorker. I think you were born in New York, right?
It's really great to see you. I'm just kidding. that was my imitation of tracking delay. Yeah, man, this works really great. Yeah, I'm actually from New York City, correct. I grew up on the Upper West Side, and after being an East Villager for many years, I brought myself back up here, and yeah, I live with my wife and my daughter on the Upper West Side. I went to LaGuardia, the arts high school, which found its way to Lincoln Center in the middle of my high school experience. Then I went to MSM, and it's interesting because I was like part of the first graduating class of undergrads at MSM. They had only a master's program at the time, and then years later, when I was a professional and went back and got a master's degree at Juilliard, I was the first class of master's degree students because they had only had that artist diploma for undergrad and artist diploma program. So go figure. But you would think I'm a borderline agoraphobe because, you know, most of my life has existed within like 60 blocks. But, you know, if I managed to kind of be reasonably worldly, and here I am.
You're like Peter Bernstein.
What is a master's from Juilliard? Like, how the hell was that experience? Was that like a 2-year thing?
Like, that was 2 years.
Man.
Well, a couple of things. Bernstein, by the way, lived on West 86th Street, and, you know, it was like always a thing. Oh, that's Pete's house. Like, whenever I walk by, and I would see him with his parents, and, you know, Pete, that great trio that you guys know and, you know,
of course,
feature quite often, found its start at Augie's Jazz Bar. And I lived, you know, a few blocks from Augie, so I was there hanging out every night. And I remember, like, so one of my first musical experiences was sitting in. You know, Pete would always open up that gig in the last set and let people play, and he was really super cool, and I would sit in, and, you know, it was the kind of thing that, like, you know, on crappy holidays when, you know, you wouldn't want to go out and play a gig. Hey, Peter, can you come play the gig? Sure. So I'd come with my guitar, and I kind of found my own little niche at Augie's, and that was some of my first professional experience, was, like, playing with all the amazing musicians who you know who came to New York through that place.
Where were you? And I mean, I know Augie's well. I mean, I used to go there. I went to Manhattan School of Music too, in 93.
So I was just before you.
Yeah, you were in the class with like Chris Potter and those cats, right? Like, yeah, exactly.
Joel Fromm, John Gordon, Greg Hutchinson, Sean Smith, Gary Dial was a student, older student.
A bunch of guys that don't know how to play, right?
Crazy. I would have quit I don't know how you guys handle that stuff, man. You guys blow my mind.
Well, but, you know, humility is a key ingredients to surviving in this music, but go on.
True. So you were right near 106 and Broadway, apparently. And were you, and I mean, we used to play Smoke every Wednesday when I was in New York. I played with this group called the Hot Pants. Mm-hmm. And it was me and Al Street and David Gibson, Ian Henderson-Smith, Strasser on drums, mm-hmm. and Adam Scone and Jeremy Manassia. Jeremy's another one. He probably was with you.
Yep.
I mean, I was going to say, didn't he go to LaGuardia?
Yep.
Originally, yeah, but he's he might be a little older than you or no?
Jeremy? I
want Jeremy to just turned 50.
Right, so I'm a little older than him.
Oh.
There he's ageless.
You His look young at heart. You're young and vibrant. Thank I mean, you know, I can't always tell because we're doing a video call, but I would say you're at least 25 years old, Max.
Hold on, let me take my mask off.
Exactly.
But at any rate, yeah, no, it was amazing growing up here in New York. I mean, in a way, like what I'd say is, you know, so many people are like the best guy in their area, then they move to New York, you know, and like I never had that experience, you know. I mean, so the great thing about that was it set this incredible bar for me, but not being of this kind of genius level that I would describe people like Pete and Adam Rogers and Greg Hutchinson and Brad Meldow and people that I got to associate, and Chris Potter, who I got to associate with and play with. You know, it was like, as Jake is implying, it's also like immensely overwhelming. Yeah. And I think, you know, I mean, and I took every musical experience with like, you know, such, you know, love and fear. But I mean, I just tried to say that, like, you know, if I tell my students constantly, you guys, like, music is not a race, it's not a sport, although there's much about conditioning yourself. And musicians, like being an athlete, you really have to kind of keep going back to the information and, you know, the sound you're going for, the level you're going for, and kind of work it. But I mean, it's not a competition, and it's
should always be enjoyable,
a contest. But yeah, and just to finish the thought, it's like, you know, it's if it is like a race, it's an endurance race. It's not a speed race. You know, getting to who you want to be, the fullest manifestation of you, is about like hanging in there for as long as it takes you to get there. And, you know, so for me, I feel like I had an idea of how I wanted to sound and, you know, maybe the way that I play now, but I just needed all this time to get there, where guys like Pete, you know, just kind of got there at 18, 20 years old. And so we all have to kind of run our races. And in a way, I mean, I think it's made me a better player, you know, for myself, and a better teacher too, because I mean, I needed all that extra time to kind of get to who I wanted to be. So I had to really kind of build up each piece like so slowly and so meticulously and so diligently over time. So anyway, I digress, but just interesting thing about New York.
That's not at all digression. I mean, I think that that's an important point that people don't realize, because a lot of musicians get really, I don't know what the word is, anxious or stressed out, especially in college now, with the slew of, let's say, guitarists. Like if you go to Berkeley, and I've said this before, I think last time I was in Boston, there was 1,400 guitar students or something. Right. This is pre-COVID, right. But I mean, within a few years. Now, that's absurd. I mean, and, you know, because we all know the amount of gigs that are available. And at the same time, these kids are really stressed out because they know they have to compete. I mean, you know, competing is something that you don't want to think about in music. You just want to do your best and do what you can, but you do have to try to get work, and there's a lot of ways to go about it. Regardless, I think people do get stressed out that they're not like geniuses at 12 or geniuses at 17, or everyone has their own way of finding their voice. When I was talking to Charlie Hunter, we did a master class with him a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And Charlie said that he was like the third best guitarist in, like, you know, he couldn't get into the jazz band or something, you know? Mm-hmm. And he found out what worked for him. And he found that he really liked to play bass and guitar at the same time and created this really interesting thing that was his own. You know, that's a far reach from someone just playing like modern jazz or a specific genre, but
totally get what you're saying.
But you know, finding your voice is important, and it takes everyone different time. Like, I know that Adam Rogers and Ben Maunder, they were at LaGuardia too, right?
Adam was at Music and Art Oh. There were two schools. There was performing arts, which was a drama and music school, and then there was music and art, which was fine art, visual art, and music that fused and formed LaGuardia. And Adam, I believe, was at MNA, and then he left MNA and went to some other kind of like professional school because, you know, he was already active professionally and musically and maybe so serious about it that like he wanted to be in a school that was even more oriented to music and less academic. So you'd have to ask Eddie. You could ask Adam, because I'm sure you guys are friends with Adam. But yeah, and Adam was friends with my older sister. I remember when you had, and in New York, we don't have the same experiences like growing up as like kids who have a hot house and a backyard and whatever. But you would have a party, right? People would come over to your apartment. I don't know if your parents vacated or agreed to vacate for a certain amount of time, you know, and people would come over. And I remember at like my sister's party, she had a trio playing, and that trio was like Adam and Ben Porowski, and I don't remember who was playing bass.
But probably, you know, FEMA.
And FEMA, awesome. Probably. It was probably, yeah, FEMA, and they were playing like A Call for All Demons or something like that, you know, like, so that's what I was checking out.
And crushing.
Crushing a Call for All Demons or something like that, and I'm like, you know, 13, and Adam's like 18 or something like that. But anyway, interesting. Oh, yeah, about the point, though, yeah, man, awesome. I mean, some people... I mean, even back in those days, I knew like harmonically, like, I loved really rich music, and my dad played, you know, semi-professional jazz piano, and I was listening to a lot of piano music and choral music, and, you know, I loved swinging and jazz, and I loved Bill Evans through my dad. But I mean, I guess, yes, I mean, as we were kind of discussing, it took me a long time to really wrap my hands around so many facets of the language, and I feel fortunate because when I studied at MSM, when I was 18, I got to study with Jack Wilkins, and although
Jack was still there, right?
Yeah, and Jack needed to kind of tame me, which he did without mercy originally, which was great. And he turned me on to Johnny Smith and to Tal Farlow and to Jimmy Rainey and Attila Zoller and Herb Ellis and Barney Kessel, and then I met Rodney Jones when I was 20, and I was already fully house trained, you know, like I wasn't like, oh, I don't like that, or like, is that cool, or is that as cool as Pat McCartney or Steve Morse or whatever I liked at the time, you know, it's like I was over all that. So when Rodney said, could you play a blues, I wasn't like, well, blues isn't cool, I was like, no, can you teach me, you know? So Rodney and I got on from the jump, and of course Rodney was into Wes and Grant Green and George Benson, and that fed my diet.
Rodney's picking style is like, it's like he's got that George Benson picking style too, right?
He does, of course. I mean, Rodney is one of the, you know, masters of, and one of the people who really the first great guitarist to really like distill Benson's picking and approach into a science. I mean, now there's other people like Hugh Farrell and David Rosenthal, who's one of Rodney's proteges, who's phenomenal. But I mean, Rodney was definitely, like I said, like in my perception, one of the first guys who really distilled Benson's style. But I mean, the point was there that for me, I've always aspired to have my own sound, which is what I feel that Jim Hall and George Benson, who are wildly different players, have. You know, like you recognize them in a few notes and you say, wow, that's that guy, because that really sounds like his thing. You know, but I'm commenting on the fact that I feel fortunate to have had a diverse kind of interest and exposure to masters of jazz guitar, that some people are just into like, oh, I want to play sweepy, shreddy lines, or I just want to swing the blues, you know, period. You know, I feel like I had such a diversity of exposure. I'm really great. And I could have closed off to it or said, I don't like that, I don't like that. I always tried to draw as much from, as I could from what was around me. And that took, I had to be humbled to learn to do that. Originally, I was kind of afraid of what I didn't know. And then eventually I learned to embrace it.
I mean, were you a chronic shedder? I mean, I know I went through a phase where I definitely practiced between 4 and 6 hours a day when I was in school and in high school. And, you know, now I'm lucky to like, you know, go to the bathroom without my kid running in, you know? So, I mean, there's a difference, but I mean, did you go through that, or were you really disciplined, or did you have to learn that?
Well, you know, I'd say that I've always practiced, and I still practice very devoutly today, albeit with less time as a parent. My practicing, you know, I'm proud of this. Some people just think it's nerdy or whatever. You know, I mean, that by the time I was in my 30s, I mean, I feel like my practicing was really excellent. Like, you know, I think in my 20s, like, I was practicing just to be able to get through tunes and sound really play cool stuff on the tunes. But then in my 30s, my practicing was like, okay, I'm going to shed this concept in every key, and I'm going to play this in different meters, and I'm going to start this idea on the beat and off the beat, and I'm going to be able to subdivide this in triplets or 16s, or, you know, I did that kind of stuff, and that's the kind of stuff that I do now. When I don't do it quite as diligently, but I also have a lot of hours in the bank, so it's kind of like I know how to kind of take what time I have and really use it. But I enjoy shedding. I mean, my wife is a classical pianist who I met at Juilliard, who was doing competitions all across Europe when she was a teenager. But we are different kinds of musicians. I mean, like, if I don't play every day, I go bonkers. I'm like not a nice person. You know, my wife, you know, prefers to play every day, but I mean, if she doesn't and then she has a concert, you know, she knows when she needs to kind of sit down and deal with the repertoire that she has to play and gets that done. But if I don't play, I just, it's like not watering a plant. I just,
right,
I die.
So during this lockdown, I mean, this is kind of a question I asked a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I've asked a lot of people on podcasts, but what has kept you sane? And have you just been playing guitar? Have you been trying other instruments? Have you been trying different things? Like, what has kept you kind of sane?
Okay, cool. Well, I mean, I'll like to, you know, we're, Jake, are you a parent, a dad? Are you a father as well as being a musician? No. Okay. Just wanted to know if we're all, okay, just curious if we're all on that same page. All good. Hey man, I took my time. Don't let anybody pressure you. Take your time. Do what's right. I am not your Jewish mother. I'm the opposite.
Hell yeah.
But it's great. When you're ready, it's great. But at any rate, I digress. So what I was going to say is, I'll answer that question on a personal level and on a musical level. A personal level was, you know, just making sure that my family was staying together emotionally and pragmatically. My wife is, you know, is a musician, and we both have these adjunct jobs in the CUNY system, and we had a lot of concerns about like how secure that was going to be, and there was some changes to navigate there. So, I mean, just trying to stay close as a family, figure out how to stay employed, that was a thing. And then we have a daughter, so who's 3 and 3 and a half now, who, you know, she couldn't go to museums and she couldn't go to her school and, you know, couldn't go to playgrounds. So, I mean, as everybody knows, I mean, we had to, you know, do alternate kind of stuff. And so, like, I had this ritual that, like, my daughter and I would take her scooter out, and she the rider, I'd push her, and I'd push her all the way from where we live on the Upper West Side all the way across to the East Side to the Met Museum through the park, and I'd be the voice of the Met Museum and the voice of the Guggenheim talking to her, and we'd sit and we'd have snacks outside the museums even though you couldn't go inside, and all the statues would talk to her. I'd be all the statues, and she'd have conversations with all the statues. And yeah, so that was really amazing in its own way. You know, I mean, so many of my friends who have more grown up, you know, 9-to-5 jobs were like, wow, I mean, I just see how weird it is to have like worked and been away from my family for so many hours when like it feels so good to get to spend that quality time with my family. So I guess some of it, I derived inspiration from spending quality time with my family. And then another thing that I did, like personally, was like I started this kind of online school. I mean, it's funny to call it that because I guess that's what it is. But I mean,
yeah, I saw some of that. It looks amazing.
So I mean, I've always taught using. I've always been on social media, and I wasn't like the very beginning of YouTube, but you know, before YouTube really hit a peak, like I had videos up there that people saw and kind of said, oh, this guy's got this thing that he does with chord melody and whatever. So, some friends of mine who were close to me and like former students of mine who were pro players and teachers themselves were like, hey man, what did you think about doing group classes? And so I started this thing, Chord Melody from the Ground Up, which is like, these group online live group classes, Zoom calls, and, you know, 5-week courses where I can keep the cost down, you know, $175 for 5 weeks, you know, 5 90-minute Zoom calls. And what I will do is I'd like walk you through, I distilled chord melody and jazz harmony down to like these essential 5 or 6 subjects. I mean, of course, there's a world of stuff inside each of those subjects, but at least it's like a core of information that I could give everybody a walk through. And then everybody in the first class would do, first 5 weeks, would do an arrangement of all the things you are, 8 bars a week for the duration of the course. Then at the end, you would get to perform your piece in the group. And
oh, that's cool. Yeah. That's pretty interactive.
Yeah. And it's, you know, well, here's an interesting thing. Like solo guitar playing, a lot of great players stay away from it. Why? Because it's solitary. Not only is it hard musically to not have the other support of other musicians, it's just, you know, kind of you're alone. But one thing that really has really worked out is I took the most like solitary format and turned it into a community group-based experience. So we're all playing for each other solo online, and everybody's getting to hear and say, well, I didn't think of doing that chord progression there or that substitution there or adding that note or that passing note or whatever. And so that's been cool. I mean, it's been really
so do you guys, does everyone discuss it too? Like, is there commentary throughout? And is it Zoom?
Yes, we meet on Zoom once a week. And usually the format of the classes is that I either perform or do a presentation at the beginning of every class. And then I turn it over to the students and I invite people to play. And I usually have a handful of volunteers. And if I don't, I try to politely prompt people to play. Because, you know, listen, man, I mean, it's a safe space. I mean, and I have a private Facebook group where everybody can post on the page. And, yeah, it's just been a no vibing zone. So I think generally speaking, the level of interaction and participation has been great. And, you know, I initially do most of the coaching in the actual live groups, but what I found is where they when they write in the chat, and they'll be, oh, I love that chord right there, or like, what was that chord you did for G7? That was great, you know, or whatever. And then I have a moderator who kind of moderates the chat and fields that stuff. So I make sure I don't miss that. And then usually on the page, the Facebook page, they interact with each other quite a bit and comment on each other's videos, and it's very positive. So, hey, yeah. So in a way, you know, this, it's a strange thing to say because COVID has been nothing short of utterly treacherous in so many ways, but it's just creatively and professionally, it's strange. It's like a very much like a lemon into lemonade experience for me. Like I created this online community that seems to be thriving, and I have 3 classes now. So I have a Stella, a class on the original chord note from ground up, which is the All the Things You Are course, 5 weeks on that. Like intro of my harmonic concept, and then on that tune, and then I have a course that's just on Stella, which is for people who have either come from an advanced background or have taken my courses. I had a course on Round Midnight, and now I have a course called Mastery of Basic Things, which is where like I go back to these 5 concepts that I kind of use as the kind of foundation of learning, and then you just focus on those things, and I have all kinds of practice drills that we do to looped tracks. You know, I send people loop tracks, and then they're able to practice these exercises in all keys. And some of them are chordal exercises, some of them are linear exercises, whatever. So yeah, it's been an unusually creative and prosperous time. The chops that I feel like I need to get together are the chops that you guys have, which are the tech chops, which is that's like less menacing than playing a
right
jazz.
Now. It is helpful at this time. I mean,
it won't matter again at some point. It really won't.
At some point, right now, it is important. I mean, there are things that people should know or are getting to know a little better about tech. Or there are a lot of people are getting cameras, right? So you just got one. You know, Jake and I have stuff, obviously. And there's a lot of musicians that I know who have bought their first mirrorless or whatever it was, you know, like they didn't get in from the DSLR phase, but now they're getting in. Nierfelder, Gilad, Hexelman, like everyone's kind of getting into this because in a way they were forced to, but there are things that everyone can do with their new cameras that's above what they think. Like for instance, I'll just throw this out there because it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Sure. A lot of cameras have a recording limit, right? Jake, what is under 30 minutes? What is it, 29, what?
Yeah, just 29, 59.
Right.
Yeah, like okay. Right before 30.
So it's right before 30, and it really has to do with something that's not technical. It has to do with a tax on camcorders. Like, it's so weird to think that would affect the functionality of a device. So if it records longer than that, they have to call it a camcorder, and then it costs more in tax. So it's something that pisses a lot of people off, because if you're recording a big show, you literally just have to, it'll stop and then you just have to press record again and it'll start right again, but it won't continuously record. It's obnoxious, right? But there's ways to get around it. Like, for instance, OBS is a free software that anyone can get, and it downloads to your computer. You literally pick a source, which would be your ZV1 or whatever, and you can record directly to OBS, and it will record right to your computer as an MP4 if you don't feel like, you know, doing the memory card thing and then uploading a big file. Also, you can use OBS, which is for its main purpose, which is streaming to a software like Zoom. So people go into OBS and you put your camera, you make sure it looks real nice, you frame yourself up, you get your audio in there, and then you can like stream to a service. And there's a bunch of ways to do it. And you can record to OBS at the same time. So again, you have a backup at like full HD quality when you're on a Zoom call. So there's a lot of things you could do. I'm just saying this for everyone, because a lot of people are getting into the game, but they don't really know what their cameras can do fully yet. And it's
right.
And we really do live in a world where there's a lot of possibilities, and it, you know, it's nice to know what these things can do so that you can make yourself look as good as possible, you know, especially in an age where literally everybody's online. Like,
what are you saying
online
about my age? At your age, did you say? No, I get it.
Yeah,
no,
your spring chicken.
At 25, you got another.
I look terrible for 25.
I was actually just thinking, like, just to get back to the guitar stuff, when you were mentioning kids were sometimes shy to like step up and like play a little. Mm-hmm. I think that is the most important step, right? Because like. Right. Guitar players, especially now, you grew up with a piano player in the house, which is amazing.
Right.
So like you understand, being solo guitar isn't normal for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Guitar players have like the protection of the band, and they're also like automatically cool.
Right.
So it's sort of it almost gives you like a fake confidence your whole life as a guitar player. Now, as soon as you step out of that, and you're like, play me a song.
Right.
It's a lot of students don't do that. Like it's they'll shy away right away. So I think that's like a different type of confidence. I think that's just awesome that you start your class like that. It's amazing.
Well, yeah, and there's a couple of things I'll say about that. I mean, I video recorded what I call a shell arrangement of all the things you are. I mean, if you wanted to, I could grab my guitar and play it. It's just like almost like the most basic jazz arrangement you could play it. I mean, not like a folky. Or just like something that would sound just totally square and not stylistic, but it's also not super hip and whatever. It would be like, you think, okay, you know some jazz chords, like that arrangement, and I walk people through it, and they can work from, and then the idea is that, you know, you could start to move the bass line around, you could start to change the voicings, you could add substitute chords, you could, I mean, there's just so many things you could do, you know, to make it more interesting, but at least they have something to work from. And I've, you know, in my experience, I found like, I mean, I kind of created those things early on and then hip them up over the years. But so what I do is in case they haven't found that sort of shell arrangement themselves, I give that to them with the techniques and say, well, you can do this or you could do that. And it's really run the gamut, because some classes, I mean, to drop a few names, I mean, I've had this guy, Carter Arrington, take two of my classes, and Carter is like this super fusion virtuoso who you're definitely going to be hearing about, kind of for people who like Ben Youngson, like that kind of level of, you know, rock shred meets jazz sophistication. He's that level of player and incredible. And Glenn Rexach, who's down in Austin, a really beautiful electric and acoustic player. Pat Clemens, so many like really high level players, but not just those guys. I mean, I also have people, whether they're teenagers or people in their 60s who never played a gig. So it's like, the thing was to like, what could I do to make all those people feel comfortable in the same creative space? And I think it's like, if I had a shell arrangement, I had these five concepts that, you know, somebody who went through a music school could really go super far, but someone who never went to music school or maybe even never had lessons could dabble with it and say, wow, oh wow. That works when I do that. Or this happens when I do that. Isn't that cool? And, you know, it's kind of all worked out that we've all been able to gel. Oh, and another thing to address what you were saying, Jay, just the pure fear factor is, yeah, I mean,
that's a big step.
Most people aspire to come up with something cool and unconventional that feels personal, yep. But if I see that they're kind of getting too cerebral and too caught up, I'll say, okay, man, just play the show, because I just want you to have the experience of, because, man, I mean, when you go see a great performance, for all we love, like, the sophisticated possibilities, if someone's heart and soul is behind what they're playing, you'll find it compelling. So I just want you to have the experience, even if you're sitting there freaked out, of just being in that position and just kind of finding in yourself to negotiate with whatever that's all about. And so that's been really cool, because people have personal breakthroughs. And this almost gets back to, you know, Adam's point too, in the very beginning, when you guys were talking about like the 1400 Berkeley students. I mean, why should there be 1400 students at Berkeley? Because, you know, I mean, aside from the commerce aspect, you know, music is so personal to people, and it doesn't actually belong to anyone. I mean, it's music is eternal and universal. And I think a lot of people, you know, some people will use music to make a living, and other people are using music to access something in themselves that only music could probably access. And it may, and if they don't dig in that deep enough, it may not lead them to where they need to get to. So, I mean, I'm aware of that when I have people walk into my virtual classroom. You know what I mean? Some people I can say, okay, that you can take that guy and plop him down on any stage and he's just going to be like, boom. And that other person who may never play a gig, if they have a positive experience in my class, they're just going to be a happier, more realized person, you know, and that's important. So it's all good to me. And I've been through enough in my personal life and my musical life and, you know, breakthroughs, setbacks, to kind of respect where people are at regardless.
I have another like specific question.
Go.
Yeah. I'm just going to keep picking your brain about the chord melody and like solo guitar thing. And you're doing a live webinar with us on the 15th.
I'm excited about it.
So
finally.
I'm excited about that too, because I'll have some questions answered probably. But I also think like a big hurdle for most people going to solo guitar is a mindset problem of like, they think it has to be root, melody, chord, root, melody, chord. Like there's it, when I watch like you play or like Bernstein and all these cats doing solo stuff like Chico Panero, it's never like, it's just like a thought process. It's, I don't know. There's no mindset that says you have to do anything a certain way. So I'm curious, like when you say shell, like, are you going only roots and melody and then filling in? Like, that's the stuff that confuses people, because it's like, you know, this, yeah. So it's, all right, I get you. See, now that's so fun in itself already.
So that's a shell. I call it a shell because those are all, you know, the most grabbable jazz guitar voicings that you would, like, learn in a Mel Bay book.
Yeah, right, you know? Exactly.
For sure.
And then you could take those voicings and, like, okay, well, when you're on that C major 7 and there's a fifth is the second lowest note in that chord, could you raise it to a sharp fifth? And then maybe even if you stretch your pinky, you can go up to a sixth, and then you have this little voice leading thing in the middle of that C major 7 chord. Or maybe you're going to take those chords that you heard and you play, and then you're going to kind of walk down the bass from F minor to E flat minor, and then up to E flat.
And now you're getting, you know, you're getting voicings, all new vocabulary, everything.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So, I mean, listen, my central concept, I'll even just give you a taste. It's like major, all the harmony, right? I mean, jazz is a lot more than harmony. I mean, it's so many things, but the harmonic part of jazz for me is knowing your major, melodic, minor, and diminished inside and out. I mean, do you want to buy the Slininski Thesaurus of Scales? Yes. But I always joke that you only have like one piece of carry-on luggage, you know, in musical life. So if you needed to fill that with the appropriate stuff, you really only need those three big guns, like, down fluently. Yep. And then, you know, so as far as harmony goes, I mean, you want, and inside those basic scales, you have, like, what are the triads in those scales? What are the seventh chords in those scales? What are the 13th chords in those scales? What are the modes in those scales? So once you've kind of sussed that out, then it's like, how do chords move? Well, like, you know, cyclically, 2-5-1, 3-6-2-5-1, 1-4-7, 3-6-2-5-1. So once you're sort of familiar with those things, then there's secondary dominant, approaching any chord with the equivalent of its dominant, even if that dominant chord isn't in the like original key we're in, tritone substitution.
Yep. It's all connective tissue, you know?
So like once you have those, So once you have those concepts working, it's amazing. And, you know, given the scope of what's possible, that, I mean, it might seem like a lot, but then you're like, you know, it's kind of not a lot. But then if you really work that stuff, the stuff you can
get out of that. It always sounds good though.
It's amazing. Yeah, so that's what I
do. It never sounds bad. So there's never not enough stuff. So yeah. It's like, that's, I think that's a really cool thing about music is the whole way you're going, it's always enjoyable. Was it the Nike commercial that was talking about like all the pro athletes and they were training and they were saying like, we're always going for like the end. And we don't realize that while we're doing that, that's the real victory. Like yeah. That's the, you're victorious the whole time. Like there's no like finish line.
There's so many ways it's been said.
Or Gatorade or something. Yeah.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, it's a common but never cliche thought to say that the process is really the journey, right? I mean,
music, exactly.
I mean, I remember going to see Kreisberg do his last record release show at Standard before COVID. And Jonathan and I have been friends for a very long time. And that's just an interesting story that like, well, I can tell that if you want later, but, and so the Jonathan story that I was going to say related to this is that, you know, so here Jonathan is, you know, playing to like a packed house at the Standard doing his release show. And like, I don't remember what happened if like the cab got stuck on the bridge on the way over. Then he turned on his amp and his amp didn't work. And he had to like change a tube or something. And somehow he had a tube, an extra tube or whatever it was.
Yep.
And he here's a guy who's like touring the world, right? Playing all these festivals and great shows and clubs and whatever. And he's like, he looked into the microphone. I'm not quoting him, I'm more paraphrasing him, but he's like, the reward is the music, you know? Yeah. You know, and it's, so even a guy like who's got a busier calendar than most people is telling me like, there's so much stress, even down to just getting to the gig and getting your stuff to work. You know what I mean?
Frustrating as it is, he plugs that sucker in. He plays a chord. He's good to go. That's the
and
best
he said,
thing
"Hey,
ever.
He's like, I just want to start the show, man, because I know as soon as we do that, I'm going to feel great." You know, and he
but Jonathan great. Also, Jonathan also takes a lot of that on himself. Like he, you know, releases his records independently. He does a lot of things independently, and he's definitely like in charge. And when you're in charge of your own thing to that level, there's going to be stress. You know, it just happens. Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, you're right. And John, I've always, you know, had the deepest respect for Jonathan's ability to do that. But I think, you know, with respect to all the musicians out there, you know, doing this, who elect to do this seriously and certainly professionally to the exclusion of like getting a day job, quote unquote, are facing that on higher levels than most people, you know. But yes, certainly Jonathan, you know, I agree with what you said, that he's doing that on a particularly high level, and that means that it's particularly demanding, for sure. Yeah, but I just am giving a shout out to all the musicians out there who are doing that.
Hell yeah.
Because even if you're not playing the great stages of the world, you know, and the best clubs of the world, just to keep yourself going in this music in any city, but certainly in New York, is like you have to be fiercely driven and independent and willing to take on a lot of challenges, you know, doing things yourself.
Solo guitar, I would think that if you were doing an entire night of it, that you would have to get into a different mindset than playing with a group. Because, you know, I'm a bass player, so I come from a bass player's mindset, which is also different than a guitarist or a singer, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as being a supporting player and being in the back, you know. Being a solo guitarist, and I think this is probably a question Jake would like answer too. I mean, what mindset do you have to get into when you're doing these gigs? I mean, do you do anything specific? Do you do breathing exercises? Do you meditate? Do you listen to music beforehand?
Wow, great stuff. You know, I probably should meditate more and do more stuff to address the purely physical and emotional and psychological state that I'm in to play solo, because that's definitely a factor. But the thing that resonated with me when you were like kind of formulating the question was a few things. I'll say one of the things I do in my group class. So this is interesting. So like week one, everybody's just deer in the headlights because I'm just kind of dropping bombs, like all the stuff, right? Then week two, people start to play and they're starting to test things out, and it's coming together, first A, second A, you know, and getting to the bridge, third week, whatever. And then everybody's got like this really difficult stuff that is really creative, but like they can't play because it's all so new and difficult. And, you know, I do something really wild with everybody is I do exercises like where I say, okay, you are no longer a guitar when you're playing this kind of dense chord melody thing. You're really like a conductor. Your mind is a conductor and your hand is an orchestra. And yeah, you have to play differently because, you know, the guitar doesn't have the range of a saxophone or a drum or certainly not an orchestra, but you have to kind of imagine, you have to simulate virtual, like an amp simulator, like a Helix, you know, a pedal. You have to pretend that you are creating the depth and dimension of texture and volume and expression that is more possible from a piano or an orchestra or an ensemble. So to do that, like one music, do you guys know the recording of This Stream, which is Freddie Hubbard in front of Klaus Overman Orchestra? It's like, I'm a huge Klaus Overman fan, so like the composer arranger. And the, he did several collaborative albums. One was with Freddie Hubbard, another was with Michael Brecker, the Cityscape album. But I love that because it combines this really authentic classical orchestral sensibility with an authentic jazz sensibility. So you always hear some huge orchestral interlude, you know, with motives, and then it kind of distills down to a jazz quartet, and there's quartet playing and improvising, and then it goes back to whatever orchestral theme. And I have people listen to this and just say, I want you, you know, when I hear them kind of struggling, I say, I want you to imagine this, that you're trying to be this, you know,
yeah,
like an actor, you know, in a character. And I also, you know, as part of that, you know, you could think, especially on a guitar, that, you know, you're playing chord melody and you're trying to do all of these different tasks at once, and it's so physical and you want to just practice physical, you know, get all the synapses to connect. But sometimes the answer is through musicality. If you close your eyes, if you stop worrying about the technique and you really just listen to the sound and the phrasing and the expression, you naturally find technical solutions for those things. But people, yeah, don't trust themselves at first, because if you're playing that new hard voicing and you don't remember where your fingers go, you think it's like, oh man, I got to be staring at that fingerboard and trying to get that. But maybe, yeah, I also do the Skywalker thing where it's like I have people close their eyes. So I'm like, they're messing up their eight bars, right? And they're like, okay, well, yeah, now I'd like you to try it. And you pull Yoda or a Ben Kenobi on them and say, do it with your eyes closed. You know, because what happens is you use your ears and it's like, you make more mistakes. The first thing is what happened. But then you're like, oh, if I just listen and I feel it, it comes to me. I'm actually able to improvise better, even if I make a mistake.
Yeah.
Because yeah, my
sensory deprivation. Totally.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, so that, and you were asking me about me and playing solo. So I guess I took the long way around to answer that question. But I guess like what I try to do is I think my solo playing and arranging is about like kind of creating atmospheres and creating spaces. Like I have these introductions that may be rubato chord intros, or they may be an ostinato, like a groove of like 2-chord vamp or a 4-chord vamp. Mm-hmm. You know, one arrangement, like if you guys watch the video that I sent you, a little intro, one thing is more contrapuntal and there's a bass line moving while there's other notes and chords moving in between. Yep. Another one might be more blocks of chords and, you know, trying to sound like, you know, more thick.
You're not alone when you're thinking like that. That's the cool part about it. It's no longer solo guitar, because right now you're thinking, you know, you're thinking Count Basie Orchestra. You're thinking, you know, you're sitting in with cats,
yeah,
and you're just
the 11,
you're just, so happy to just, yeah, like you're the one doing it. But in your mind, like you're not alone. That's
right.
So much history to draw on and so many artists to draw on. I mean, that's awesome.
So that's the thing is, like, you know, try to create the arrangement and the chord choices and the techniques you use are create a space, and then your mindset and the textures, you know, right. Are you an orchestra? Are you a big band? Are
yeah.
you a chamber quartet? Are you, yep. I mean, I'm a huge Take Six fan. I mean, now I'm a huge Jacob Collier fan, but he comes from Take Six. I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, I'm often, or Count Basie, you know, Wes Montgomery. Because to me, yep. Wes Montgomery sounds like Count Basie on guitar. I mean,
yeah, it seemed like he got the shout chorus thing from that, at least, you know.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And he's just doing so, quarterly. Yeah, it's like his chord solo stuff.
Yeah. So that's one way that I kind of get it. I try to, I mean, when I'm playing guitar in an ensemble, I'm thinking of, like, I'm the guitar role, you know.
Yeah.
But when I'm playing solo, it's like I'm kind of being, you know, like I remember seeing a buddy of mine, a student who's an actor by profession but played guitar, and he was doing Simple Stories, which was a Langston Hughes play where one actor plays different characters having a conversation. So, cool. You know, you know, kind of neat thing when you're going solo to kind of think about that.
I mean, chess players do it all the time, too. It's right, a cerebral thing, but it's also like there is a disconnect there where you actually sort of are two different people. You know, you kind of have to be.
But. Wild. So, I mean, and then like anybody else, and I want to be fair, like anybody else, guys, I just sweat bullets. And I mess it up too. You know, I mean, seriously, I have a buddy in my group named Dave Bricker. So Dave has played guitar his whole life, but ultimately he is a public speaker and a public speaking coach. And I've been thrilled because he's been my moderator. So in a way, having Dave in the classes has been incredible because, you know, not only is he a guitarist and plays well, but, you know, he helps people train to just speak in front of people. So you could be in that regard, it doesn't matter if you're a great player or not. It's like that can be just how comfortable with yourself you are. You know what I mean? You can have a great player who feels just really self-conscious being on a Zoom call. You know, it's like, and you can have somebody who doesn't know a whole lot, but just feel very open. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's been great to have Dave involved in my classes because, you know, we deal with just being with people and being with each other and being with more music, you know, just as a kind of a neat thing, not necessarily attached to how much harmony you know or whatever. Yeah, so I totally get that.
So the webinar that we're gonna do on May 15th, you want to tell everyone what that is exactly? I mean, I know along the lines, and I actually do know what it's about, but let's have you tell it.
Right. Well, initially, you know, Adam and I have been friends, you know, in touch a lot this year. So, I mean, since the inception of our conversations about doing stuff together, you know, we talked about doing a tune because, you know, it's always really graspable to just say, let's take apart a song. And initially I said, oh, you know, I have this arrangement in Nearness of You. And that's not something that I've covered in any of my group classes. And it's an arrangement I really love to play. But then I kind of wanted to make it a little more broad. So I think we agreed that we were going to call it, you know, Solo Ballads Played chord melody ballads played solo, including intros and outros. So I love ballads. I mean, I love other stuff too, but I love playing ballads. And, you know, something that I really love doing with ballads is playing intros and outros. And an intro can have a lot to do with the tune, meaning like you're borrowing something melodic or harmonic from the tune, or it actually can do something completely different, like have a vamp or just meander around harmonically and just set an atmosphere. So I want to talk about both how I learn a tune, you know, and I'm a big fan of just like going to YouTube and listening to Ella and Sinatra and all the people who just deliver a standard, you know, with integrity, just not too, doesn't need to be a lot of embellishment. It could just be that beautiful rendition of a song and the words and harmony and then how to, and people go to the real book and it's like, okay, well, that's a big, you know, helpful tool, but a big can of worms. So how do you reconcile that? And then start putting together a personal arrangement, you know, so that's, you know, my aspiration for the webinar is to like talk about some fundamental techniques that I do to learn a tune and then develop a tune, including the chord melody, and then some kind of creative intro and outro that might, you know, create a whole other atmosphere or texture.
I love that. The intro is my favorite always. It's because it is so creative. It's like, you know,
you're always mystified by it, right?
Well, in a case like that, a ballad like that, you know, Nearness of You, it's sort of like what the person's doing there before they find their pen to write, you know, a love poem to someone. So it's like that whole scenario. It could be anything, you know. And I love that. Intros are
it's
my
like
favorite.
What mood in you're in, and then you're just creating a vibe, and then you sweep in.
Yeah, and I mean, and it depends. I mean, I tend to like intros like the ones you guys are describing, which really kind of leave something open, you know, and then like, you're like, oh, it's that tune. Oh, cool. But then, you know, for those people out there who really say, you know, I play in a context where, like, I need to really be able to lay down what it is because, you know, my band leader will be pissed off if they don't know, like, I'm playing this. So I just want to say that I'll cover that as well. So while I personally, you know, appreciate, like, the things that are more poetic and kind of, like, leave you on the edge of your seat, like, oh, wait, I'm not sure what I'm hearing yet. Oh, it's that. But, I mean, I want people to know that, hey, you need to know how to, you know, play what was the other one? Polka Dots and Moonbeams. Like, all right, okay, let's work from the last eight bars and do something on that. That's not the head, but we'll be inventive and creative, and then we'll set that tune up, and anybody playing in that band will be like, oh, he's doing that, and that's cool, it's interesting, it gets me in the mood, and then when it starts, I know right where I am, and I'm good. So it depends on what your situation is.
And it depends if it has, like, a pickup or not. You know, if you're picking up into it, that's a whole other thing, too. That's, you know, that's great.
So at any rate, we'll cover some cool ground. But tell me, ask away.
I was going to say, you know, for anyone listening, you know, our webinars aren't just the normal webinar experience. We film them with a second camera just in case audio or video gets weird, which happens sometimes with webinars or Zoom or any of that stuff. And we film them with a second cam and we get really good audio. And we also add notation to them afterwards. So everyone that attends the webinar gets the video, the produced version, free when we finally produce it. Cool. So that actually is been working out really well for us, and everyone's been happy because, you know, we have users and viewers from all over the world. And if you're somewhere and your internet isn't perfect, you'll get it. Don't worry. Like, it'll be there and it'll be slick. And, you know, and I think that that's a really cool thing that we're trying to do and we've been doing, and that, you know, we're going to do with this one. So we're excited.
And I'm really excited to, you know, while I've been happy to kind of be doing my own thing, I mean, I think the world of you guys and your roster and all the incredible music education you put out. And I'm kind of looking forward to kind of being out of my typical orbit, you know, to kind of have some creative things come up that will surprise me and surprise everyone in a good way. So, yeah, I mean, definitely feeling the same good vibe.
That's going to be cool.
Yeah, and we're going to have, you know, there's always a lot of questions from the audience, which is great. So, you know, since we use Crowdcast, which is a cool platform, you know, everyone asks questions and then I'll have them upvote, you know, their favorites so we know what's most important because it's hard to get through them all. And of course, you're going to have your lesson agenda that we're going to kick it off. So there's going to be a lot to talk about. And I mean, I love that stuff, man. I think solo guitar is just huge. It's a vast subject.
It's a big area. And I think people in my groups, you know, there have been some really great players, but who just felt that their solo playing was disproportionate. So they've really surprised themselves with how much, you know, progress they can make in a short amount of time with certain information and certain kind of concepts at their disposal. And then people, like, as I said, people who have never played a gig, who didn't necessarily feel like they would be, you know, confident using those tools, were able to kind of put themselves on the map and feel really great. So I'm excited to share what that stuff is so that people who come to this thing can have that access to that and get to know us all. And I think we're gonna have a blast. And I also should say that one thing that I'll, you know, put out here that I would love to hear from people is how much they would like to have me play a full arrangements or play sections of arrangements. So again, I mean, following the mindset that you guys often work from of working with a tune, I mean, I could just play down a tune or a few tunes, or I could say, oh, well, here's the A section of this tune. Maybe I could play the A section to five or six tunes because they're eight bars each and just talk about different things that happen. I mean, if you have something that you want to see going into this, Peter Mads, I know what that guy does. Yeah, it's interesting. Well, I'd love to hear the way he does this tune or this. How would he treat the A section of this tune? Let us know. Maybe I can do that.
Yeah, that's great. It's a great idea. And, you know, opening up that dialogue and the fact that we can, you know, take all these questions live and everything really is, you know, it's a perfect situation for something like that. And, you know, it's all the same for you. You know, if they start calling strange tunes that you never heard of, right?
Well, I wouldn't say that. That's why I'm putting it out in advance. I mean, you know, how's this? Another thing that I'm going to do, what I can do, guys, and, you know, I wonder if our listeners would find this interesting. I'm going to send you a repertoire list of songs that I have active arrangements on. You know, some of them I'll be more familiar with that I practice quite frequently, and some of them will be tunes that I don't play quite as often. So it might be interesting to kind of put me on the spot. But, you know, you could say, if everybody looks at that list, hey, I'd love to hear what Peter does with the Bridge of Skylark. I'd love to hear what he does with the A section of I Got It Bad. I'd love to hear, you know, how he plays a chorus of Giant Steps with chord melody and solo guitar. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that might be fun. It's a little bit of Stump the Band, but it's not total open season, like taking shots at me.
I agree. No, I think that's cool. And I mean, I think that that's perfect, and there's going to be a lot of options, and it's going to fly. And I hope anyone that sees this or listens, because, you know, this is a podcast. Again, this is the first time we're doing video. So, you know, I've got COVID hair right now. It will be shorter soon, but I haven't cut it in a year. Yeah, we're all in the same boat. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be really cool, and I'm excited for it. I think that, you know, we've talked a bunch, and, I haven't eaten dinner, and I know that you probably haven't either, because you have a kid too, and this is what happens. And so I'm going to say thanks so much for joining us in our video voyage, our pioneer, what is it? A maiden voyage.
Maiden voyage.
Yeah, which is also a great, great record with, you know, George Coleman, you know, and her. Obviously, there's a guy on piano, I forget his name, Herbie Hancock. Yeah, that was him. And some other great players on it as well, not just those guys. But anyway, thanks for joining us on this maiden voyage of, you know, our video version of this. And thanks, Peter, so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure, you guys. I'm really looking forward to the event, and I'm really looking forward to being helpful to the musicians who dial in and want to kind of share some time and music with us.
Right on, man. All right, talk soon.
Talk to you soon. Thanks.
Questions, comments, episode ideas, hate mail? You can get in touch with us by contact form, email, or voicemail, all of which are available at our website, theperformerspathway.com. If one of your questions or topics makes it into the podcast, with your consent, of course, you'll receive a shiny new $10 gift card for use at mymusicmasterclass.com. That's our sister website, which contains over 600 original educational videos from your musical heroes, so we look forward to hearing from you.